Hi, my name is Mike Nagrant, and you're listening to Hungry Magazine from Chicago, Illinois.
4, 3, 2.
One more time.
Hey, welcome back for another week with Hungry. A record number of folks downloaded last week's conversation with Chef Paul Kahn of Blackbird, and, you know, I just want to say thanks for listening. It really means a lot. And, you know, as always, if you have comments, please send them my way to mjnagran@hungrymag.com. We're always looking for feedback to improve what we do here at Hungry. This week I sat down with Nader Salty, a practicing surgeon who in his free time just happens to own and operate Saltus Restaurant in Chicago's West Loop neighborhood. He's not an absentee owner, he's a hands-on manager who's in-house almost every night. Saltus was recently named one of Chicago's best new restaurants by Chicago Magazine, and it's a zen-like restaurant that focuses on Mediterranean Asian fusion.
Why does a surgeon want to become a restaurateur? And stay a surgeon too, because you're still practicing.
Yes, I'm practicing full time. I own my own practice in general and gastrointestinal surgery, colorectal surgery, and I enjoy it. But for the past 10 or 15 years, I've been in the mood to have my own spot and show my vision of dining and have people see it and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I've always wanted to open my own restaurant because I've always liked people and seeing them enjoy eating food and the dining experience. I wanted to have a place of my own too.
Were you always a big diner? I mean, did you always eat out all the time?
Always. Since I was a kid, my parents would take us out to different restaurants and in our town and outside of our town, and every time we traveled outside of the country to Europe, I mean, the dining portion of our vacation and our trip was huge. We used to enjoy it, and as I grew up and went to college and medical school, even though, you know, you don't make a lot of money or you're basically broke, you still find ways to just dine and enjoy it, you know?
What are some of your favorite places? Are there some restaurants that inspired you or that...
There are many restaurants that inspired me. For example, when I came to college to Chicago in the mid to late 80s, I really enjoyed, at that time, they were kind of very contemporary and revolutionary for the city of Chicago, the Scusi and Avanzari. I used to go there all the time, and every time I had visitors from out of town, uncles, friends, I would take them there. I liked anything that was new and slightly different, off the beaten path, and that always has inspired me, you know. Outside of the city of Chicago, I mean, basically every town I visited, I was inspired by one or more of the restaurants that I dined in, you know, whether it is in this country or elsewhere.
Do you have a favorite dining place? I think I read, there was an article, I think, on the National Restaurant Show last year, and you were talking about how you were in Provence, maybe, and you saw some uniforms there. And do you go to Provence a lot?
I went to Provence once in 2003, and at that time, the idea of opening the Saltus restaurant in Chicago was gaining steam. We have not signed the deal on the space, but we were in deep negotiations. I had already formed the corporation and the legal aspects. I was looking for investors. So when I was in Provence with my partner, Carl Yang, enjoying everything, I fell in love. I fell in love with one of the spots that we chanced upon. It was basically a coffee shop in the Cour Mirabeau, one of the most famous roads and locations in all of Europe, actually. And we're sitting in a coffee shop, but it just had that character. You sit outside underneath the trees in front of the fontains. It's a city famous for fountains, Aix-en-Provence. And I was inspired by some of the uniforms that the wait staff and serve staff had, the colors. And although I looked around in this country for a lot of the color of the uniforms that they had, and the type of material, I couldn't find it, but my business card has now the exact same color. So that was the inspiration, you know. Yeah, I get inspired. Every place I visit inspires me, not necessarily in the food, but in certain aspects of it. So, and that's very important. If you have a vision, you can't just stay with that vision. You have to formulate it based on what others have done with their own vision. And then you add two different visions and create your own.
So are you a history guy? I know I had read some stuff about Marco Polo.
I love history.
You'd wanted to kind of talk about the spice route and, mm-hmm. and translate that kind of into your food.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've always liked history. History makes the present and the future, basically. You look at history and there's a reason why they say it repeats itself. So you learn from history. When it comes to saltas, you know, we have contemporary cuisine with some Mediterranean and Asian accents to it. And I'm not recreating the wheel with that. Our chefs and our concept is not recreating the wheel, really. Historically speaking, there has been a, you know, trade and economical and, various aspects of connections between Mediterranean cultures and the Orient or Eastern Asian cultures. And, you know, all the travels of Marco Polo and others and historical writings, you can read about that. Many of the battles were fought, based on people who went between the two cultures. And I figured culinary-wise, I wanted to bridge that connection in the 21st century. And I think it's working. Mm-hmm. It's working. Kebabs, in Mediterranean cultures, they're called satays in Asian cultures. Certain spices, the curries, the nutmegs, the different foods, they have had connections, between the two cultures, and we're bringing it together at Saltas, and it's very enjoyable.
And how much of that was your vision, and how much of that was, the chefs you worked with? Is that something that you said, I want to bring, you had an idea or a vision for a Mediterranean Asian fusion style, or was that something that it was more of a collaboration with your chefs?
Well, everything is a collaboration. The original idea, when I wanted to open the restaurant, I definitely wanted this type of cuisine with Mediterranean and Asian flair, and then you look around, you search around, you create certain dishes together in the collaboration of your chef, I have ideas about things. A couple of the dishes were created by me, but also many of the dishes were created by the chef and within that realm of cuisine.
And you said you were born in Jerusalem, right?
Yes.
I would imagine a lot of the inspiration came from some of those roots.
Yes.
What kind of food memories do you have? I don't know how long you were in Jerusalem.
I was born there and I lived through high school and I still have family members there. So go and visit them every few years. Now that I'm busy as a physician and surgeon and restaurateur, it's hard to just buy a ticket and just fly off there for a week or two. But in terms of food memories, I can go, I can go back as recent, for as long as I can remember, even as a young boy, helping my parents and grandparents with cooking of the food, almost at the point of bugging them, really, And then everywhere in the street, as a kid, you just run to the corner grocery store or corner falafel stand or kiosk, and they all cook the food and run after the street vendors with the corn and all sorts of sandwiches, and all the aromas all over the streets. It's something you will never forget, and I'm sure many people who will listen to what I'm saying now will fully attest to that.
There's a big spirit of street food.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Street vendors, are the heart and soul. They're almost to the point of celebrities, You know who they are, their route, when they're coming, and you just wait for them. And as they're passing, you just sit with them, talk about different things. Sometimes you end up talking politics and family, and then buy a couple of sandwiches and go on your way and wait for the next moment,
It's almost like the Middle Eastern version of like ice cream carts in America.
Yes, and we used to have ice cream, we had the ice cream vendors. We had the ice cream vendors over there, and they would walk in the streets with little, we didn't have trucks of ice cream like they do here, but we had people walking with a basically cooler on their back, and they would walk through the neighborhoods, and you buy the ice cream from them, and that's enjoyable too, all the different tastes and different types, and chocolate and vanilla and strawberry and lemon.
Is there a dish that you remember from like your grandmother or your mother growing up that you just return to? I don't know, maybe even something that inspired a menu item? Or?
There are a lot of dishes. What I can tell you is certain items of, using couscous and using, just the various ways of cooking couscous with lamb stews, or certain what we call upside down dishes. They're basically Middle Eastern versions of biryani. You know, you end up using all sorts of meats and even seafood and all sorts of vegetables. And every family has their own secret ingredient that they have to add while they're cooking it. And then the best part of really the meal is not just helping them as a kid and learning little tidbits over the course of many years, but actually when you're eating with the rest of the family members. That is the best part. And then you will never forget the grandparents as they're cooking. There are certain visions that you remember them in the kitchen or as they're taking the food. These things inspire me. I remember many dishes, but as I said, it's the experience of dining when we're eating. And when we're preparing the food and learning certain secrets here and there is really the most memorable part of the whole thing.
Now the space, did you consult with an architect? Is that something?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't do everything alone. Absolutely impossible. And so when you look at space, you have to consult a professional and you have to go check various spaces, and then you look at the space that you feel comfortable with, and that's the space that you have to formulate with the architect, designer, and engineers, and see what you need to do in order to bring it to par or to get to the vision that you are trying to project architecturally and design-wise and food-wise. Mm-hmm. Basically, I was in daily conversations with my designer and my architect through the course of a couple of years until the restaurant opened.
What were your goals for the feeling of the space? I know you had talked a lot about the detail, like with that pipe downstairs,
yeah,
and how you guys wrapped around it. And
it's the general idea of the space is I wanted a space that was modern, warm, and minimal, and goes an extra step from what I have seen in the city of Chicago. I love many, many places in the city of Chicago when it comes to dining. But I also had my vision of a certain type of space that I wanted, and you just have to put it together. So I wanted a place that is minimal, a place that is very warm inside, not boring, not too austere. And I think it started when I talked to the architect and the designer. The only thing that I really, really demanded, I said, no matter what we do to bring to that idea of minimalism and warmth, the most important thing within the design is we must have an inner balcony, basically, or mezzanine. I wanted a mezzanine where people are sitting or enjoying the space upstairs and looking downstairs, and it had to be open. And so we formulated the design of the place around that idea, and this is what Saltus is right now. Yeah.
And that middle area, there's a lounge area, is that right?
On the second floor, we have a lounge area. We serve the full dinner also over there, but it's also more comfortable seating. We have sofas, we have ottomans, we have also regular dinner tables. It's a very warm, integrated space within a space, or an element within an element, and it has full DJ capability. It's all wired in. The whole space is wired in for a great sound system, but also on the second floor we have a booth for the DJ that can interact with the diners and the people who are lounging over there and enjoying the space too. And so I have that whole capability.
Yeah, that seems to be like a new thing. I think I saw it at Butter Now has an upstairs lounge. And mm-hmm. It seems to be that restaurants in the city are morphing to be even more late night dining destinations, mm-hmm. and just multi kind of functional spaces.
Yes. Well, I mean, part of the vision is to have a space where people can come for just pre-dinner drink or even an appetizer and then stay for dinner. But if they have finished dinner at our place or elsewhere, they can come for an after-dinner drink or lounge or just relax and stay late night. And Saltus offers all of that because we are open late night. We have a DJ. We have a lounge. We also have a beautiful Zen garden that will be ready very soon. Actually, it's being built as we speak right now. And so we have that capability. It's a fully integrated space that will give people a full dining experience, the full spectrum of dining experience, whether it's just a drink, appetizer, full dinner, late night, after dinner, lunch. I mean, you have it all. You have it all.
This used to be a corned beef factory, is
yes.
that right?
Yes.
What did it have when you bought the space? Was it still
oh, yeah.
like a lot of old stuff
it was
there?
It was a full-fledged corned beef factory, and the company moved just a few blocks away, but they did not finalize their deal with the new location until after we finalized our deal. So they were hinging on us moving in, so they move out. But it was a full-fledged corned beef factory for many, many years, at least 70 years. And this building is about 100 years old.
How does being a surgeon, how does that inform the process of building a restaurant? I would guess that there's some experiences you have that maybe made you think differently than a restaurateur, a traditional restaurateur might.
Well, being a surgeon, you know, you kind of also live on the edge because you're dealing in many cases with life and death situations, and being a physician and surgeon as a profession, not just as a human being, but as a profession, it is a very regulated business federally and legally, and there are certain things that you just can't deviate from. Not that people look to deviate from certain legal aspects, but you're born into that kind of mentality where you have to do it that way because you're being told to do it that way by the state or by the government or by OSHA or by certain regulations that are put upon. And certain of these regulations, many people just don't agree with. They just have to do it because it's given to you. And so when you come to the restaurant business, you know, you have that kind of mentality of being a physician and you want to open a restaurant and you want to build a restaurant. And certain of these regulations or that mentality may not necessarily apply in the restaurant business. To me, actually, the restaurant business is very enjoyable because it allows you more freedom of choice in what you want to do, you know. And so I like it, but also it creates certain dilemmas and certain conflicts when it comes to what you have been used to do for many years, and then you have to apply to what is happening in the restaurant business, and you get these conflicts where it just doesn't work, you know. But at the same time, the mentality as a physician and surgeon, where you have to work very hard, and you know, the work ethic and the punctuality and promptness and dealing with human beings on a daily basis, you understand emotions, and so you're more. Speaking personally, I felt very comfortable building this restaurant. You learn something every day. You deal with human beings every day in various aspects of their work and in various aspects of their emotions, and it's a lot of fun. But it really helps you.
You have to have a good bedside manner in the restaurant business.
Basically. Right? Just like you have to have a good bedside manner, you have to have great table manners, and, you know, you can't satisfy every person who comes to your restaurant, just like you can't satisfy every patient that comes to your office. And there are certain times when you have to cut off certain relationships, and that is true for every physician I have known. And I am sure every restaurateur will tell you that there are certain patrons and certain employees, you know, people they deal with may not just be compatible with what they have, and I am finding that this is true. It doesn't mean we don't do our best. We do always our best. We try to satisfy every palate, every emotion, every person that walks by the door, but sometimes we falter. Sometimes it just doesn't work for no reason. It just doesn't work, but you keep moving on, and you satisfy the remaining 99%.
Is that kind of what happened with Michael Taus? Was that, you know, just a difference of opinion, philosophy?
Partly, I mean, of course, you know, I don't want to get too deep into that. You know, when Michael Taus was at Saltus, I mean, we moved forward. And on a short notice, Michael decided to leave the restaurant, and we had to find on a short notice a different chef, Brad Phillips, and we are very excited to have him.
How did you choose Brad?
Why did I choose Brad? First of all, Brad is he is very highly talented, and I love his calmness in the kitchen. Very focused, very directed, and very talented when it comes to cuisine and presentation. He loves Southern Mediterranean cuisine. It is his forte. But at the same time, he loves Asian foods. And so he absolutely fits the character of Saltus. And when we met and told him the vision, and he was very comfortable with it, and he just basically stepped in and moved forward. I love his calmness. I love his talent. He is very calm. And people respect that. People really respect that. And they listen to him.
Was there like any dishes, or was there like a surprise in his cuisine, something that he brought that just surprised you, or that you were really delighted by food-wise?
Yeah, I mean, the way he presented that initial wild bass dish on New Year's Eve, it was absolutely, absolutely delicious. People loved the taste of the lemongrass broth with the sautéed artichokes and hearts of palm. It gave substance to a dish that, you know, many seafood dishes are usually presented with a little sauce and nothing else, and you just eat it. Well, when I got that dish sitting on that sautéed artichokes and hearts of palm with the beautiful lemongrass broth, it was absolutely, absolutely delicious. People loved it on New Year's Eve, and we continued it through the winter. His seared duck breast with with turnips, you know, sautéed turnips. It was absolutely delicious, and it had caramel sauce and, you know, hot sauce with that, the way he created it. It basically was his version of a kung pao Chinese dish, and it was absolutely delicious and beautifully presented.
How much, in terms of, like, purveyors and, you know, the market, are you getting involved? I mean, do you guys have a focus on, you know, it has to be sustainable or organic, or how much of that plays into what you're buying for the kitchen?
We're looking, you know, some of our, some of the items that we bring are, you know, organically oriented, and we're actually in touch now with a couple of the farmers in the country that cater to high-end restaurants and chefs, and everything they do is very organic. And
like the Chef's Garden, right?
Chef's Garden. Actually, we just got in touch with the Chef's Garden a couple of days ago, and they sent us their information, and Brad Phillips and a couple of the kitchen staff at Saltus are aware of them. They have met Farmer Lee Jones a couple of times, actually, various times. And so we're looking into that also.
I think the interesting thing about Brad too, of course, is he was at Naomi, but he also spent time with Paul Kahn and
yes.
Blackbird, which, you know, Blackbird is
one of my favorite restaurants.
Yeah.
I respect the people at Blackbird and Avec. It's of course the same concepts, same group of people, and I love their cuisine. I love their space. I love what they have done for the city of Chicago.
Yeah, you see a lot of that influence in terms of, you know, even the food. I think mm-hmm. the clean, simple flavors on the.
Yeah, I respect every restaurateur and every vision. Every vision has a reason. In my own way, I love comfortable, simple cuisine, clean cuisine, and Saltus caters to that. You know, I want people to feel that they belong at Saltus, belong there, they belong here. And so when, you know, I want them to come any time of the day, or, I mean, any time when we're open, and just sit by themselves or with a group of people and feel very comfortable. And I want the cuisine to reflect that. And I think it does, because you can come and have a beautiful lamb burger with hand-cut fries, but you can also have a different type of more modern cuisine. But everything on the menu is very comfortable.
What's the biggest challenge of being an independent restaurateur? I know you hear a lot about, you know, all the pressure from the corporate people, and they can negotiate low prices, and, you know, it seems like it's just really tough for people. I mean, you know, and we're seeing more of it in Chicago, but I know it's still pretty tough.
It is a tough business. I keep telling my friends and colleagues that certain times I feel it is much easier to save a life than to serve a dish to a diner. And in some way it is a tough business, because you have to stay on top of the game every day. The tough part of the restaurant business I am finding is that you have to, you can't be everywhere at all times, and all your employees have to do their part. And every now and then, one or more of these employees may not be at their best. And when one or more of the employees are not at their best for that day, one diner is not going to be a happy diner, and they're going to be writing a bad review or requesting to talk to, returning a dish or requesting to talk to a manager or to the owner to complain about it. And it is their right to do so. And but you know, if the dishwasher is not calling sick, or if some line cook wasn't, you know, or sometimes I am not at the top of my game and I falter, you know. And so that's the difficult aspect of it. You have to depend on a lot of people to create one single beautiful dish for a diner. At the end of the day, it is about the type of, it's about the dish that somebody is going to eat at the end of the day. And you have to depend on many people to create that dish. So that's a tough part of the business, to create that team and keep that team on a daily basis going beautifully forward until closing time. And then you worry about the next day, the very next day. The other tough point is, of course, the financial aspect. When you are a new independent restaurateur and you're not sitting on a bank processing, I mean, money processing machine, I mean, you really have to count your you really have to count your dollars every day. And I am not afraid to say that. I mean, it is a tough business financially, and you just have to keep moving forward with that and hope for the best and look for return customers and word of mouth and great, you know, great events that come forward. And that is a tough part of the business.
Yeah, there's so much competition.
Yes.
There's, I think, 10,000 plus restaurants in the city.
Yeah, it's a great place to eat, and I love to eat out. And one part of, you know, if you want me to say that, another tough part of being an independent restaurateur is you can't enjoy the number of times you go out to eat, like before you open the restaurant. I mean,
yeah.
I used to go out every day, and I can't do that now every day because
probably don't have a big personal life right now, I would guess.
I don't have a big personal life, but you know what? I have always been an independent human being. Always, you know, very simple. I love great cuisine. I love travel. But at the end of the day, I'm a simple human being. You put me in a coffee shop with a cup of coffee and a newspaper, I can sit there for hours, enjoy watching people, and it will make my day. So at the end of the day, I don't need to be all over the place and you know, doing anything more than what I like to do at the end of the day, which is hanging around watching people. And I can do that at the restaurant.
Certainly, yeah. What's your vision for the restaurant going forward? You know, from where you are now today, where do you want to be in a year? You know,
in a year?
What do you see for 5 years? You know?
My vision is for this restaurant to be successful and cater to the population of Chicagoans in the neighborhood and elsewhere in Chicago, and also to various groups of people that come from outside. I want us to be known nationally that we are a good, solid restaurant that people can come to anytime and enjoy. And I want them to get their money's worth when they come and enjoy it and tell their friends about it and become repeat customers. That is my vision. In a year, I want to be in a more stable situation where a lot of the hassles and the unsettled aspects of running the restaurant in an early phase, which we are now still in an early phase, I would love in a year or so to have put that behind me and just basically go on the second gear for the restaurant, which is moving forward, creating new dishes, staying within the vision, and letting people enjoy the space, becoming more well-known. In 5 years, maybe the same thing, and perhaps we can, you know, I can't stop. I'm the type of human being who I can't stop at one place. I would love, I mean, in my vision, I have a second space in mind, or a second vision in mind. And I would love to be able, mentally, financially, economically, and personally, to be able to bring a second space of some sort to the city of Chicago too.
Do you think if this becomes successful and you can transition into a second space like that, do you think you'll leave surgery behind, or do you think that's something that is part of you that you'll always do?
You know, I spent 15 or 16 years of my life after high school just becoming a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Surgery is a way of life. You grow into it and you continue growing into it. And it's my first passion, and I will continue that. Right now, I don't have plans to leave surgery. I enjoy it. I love seeing people happy, you know, after you help them and cure their diseases, cure their symptoms. I don't have plans to leave surgery at the present moment. And but, you know, you never know what the future carries. You know, you really never know what the future carries, you know.
How did you choose the West Loop neighborhood? Was it just purely the building, or is there something about the neighborhood that you like?
I love the West Loop neighborhood. I've always loved the West Loop neighborhood. I love the edginess of it. It's edgy. It has a mixture of just lofts and old buildings, meatpacking spots and grungy spots, dirty spots. But also at the same time, you have some new modern residential towers and you know, lofts that people are living. It's a building that it's a region that is growing. It's very close to the city, to most parts of the city.
You went to the University of Chicago, right?
Yes, I went to college and medical school there.
How did you choose the University of Chicago?
We've had a family connection with the city of Chicago from the 1960s when my uncles moved here. And so when we finished college, when I finished high school in Jerusalem, we wanted to go to a place. And when you go to a different country, it's nice to go close to where your family is. So Chicago. Well, through high school, I've always, don't ask me why really, but I've always looked at the University of Chicago, probably through some of the readings in science and in history. I've always looked at the University of Chicago as a great spot, and I applied to it, you know. I've always known somehow that I was going to end up at the University of Chicago. I remember through my junior high school years and my high school years. And I consider myself very, very lucky to have been there. It is such a great experience, such a great school, and a beautiful neighborhood, very well integrated neighborhood of Hyde Park.
Did you study in undergrad?
I actually had a chemistry degree.
Okay.
And then I went to medical school after that, same school, yeah. University of Chicago.
So you spent quite a deal at Hyde Park early
8 years.
Yeah.
And I still go there all the time. I love to drive. Like I told you before, I love driving aimlessly. Well, when I go to Hyde Park, I love driving because I know every road over there. But I love driving through the campus and walking in the campus. It's beautiful architecture, Gothic architecture. You can clear your mind and just walk around and go to the little coffee shops and just watch people on the benches. And the Hyde Park has some great dining spots, unknown spots, but some great dining spots, you know.
Sure. Le Petit Folie.
Yeah, they have that. My favorite, actually. If you want a killer small burger, you just go to Ribs and Bibs on 53rd and Dorchester. Their homemade barbecue sauce, the burger and fries, their smoked ribs and rib tips. It's an amazing takeout place. And people who know dining in Chicago, who know the spot, you will never see tourists there. You'll see just real Chicagoans.
Were they around when you were in school?
Oh, yeah. They've been around for 40 years.
So you've been going for a long time.
I've been going since 1985. September of 1985.
Yeah, you know, now it's an interesting place because, you know, Jerry Kleiner is opening a spot up there.
In Hyde Park, I know.
You know, it's almost like maybe, you know, it's a new restaurant destination
yeah.
for the city.
I've always looked at it as a great area to live and just, when you have some of the greatest minds in the world living there, and then you have some of the greatest minds from the world visiting there, you know, and then you have great students, and you're bound to have very interesting people over there, and it's just a very enjoyable place.
So if you were having a dinner party, or in this case, say you were throwing a party for the restaurant, but the people you can invite, you know, they could be living or dead. There's no resources involved. If you could have anybody here, who would you want to have, and maybe why?
Well, first of all, I would love to invite my grandparents on both sides of my family, my mother and my father. I would love to invite them and just see the fruits of them teaching me over the years of what I have now achieved, you know. I can tell you that my grandparents knew that I loved food, I would love to show them that they have been part of what Saltus is. To me, Saltus is a culmination of my life. It's my vision, historically and from my childhood. And my grandparents have been part of it, so I would love to invite them. I would love to invite my... the one person I really liked a lot in the past is Julia Child, you know? I enjoyed, because when I was even in high school in Jerusalem, we used to see her on TV.
Really?
She was the one, yeah, in certain TV, you know, aspect. So, I would love to invite Julia Child to come and to dinner and sit at the table and enjoy the food. You know.
What do you think you would ask or talk to Julia Child about?
Comment on the sauce. Whatever sauce I present for her on the dish, you know.
Hopefully she'd like it.
Yeah.
And if not, she could probably fix it.
That's right. That's right.
This ends this culinary podcast for Hungry Magazine. Check out www.hungrymag.com for more.